Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday Magazine for this August 31st, 2023. I have your host, James J. Mayloff, here. In part two, we're going to welcome in Janelle Weir, horticultural educator with UW Extension. Right now, joining us, we have our good friend, Mike Hittner. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, James, and everybody in Radioland.
And we have joining us on the phone our good friend, Tom Bremer. Tom, good to talk to you.
Good morning, or afternoon.
Sorry. Yeah. No, Tom.
I'm a little behind.
Tom, if you didn't do it, I was going to. One of us was going to do that, so I appreciate you doing that, Tom. Thank you. And thank you both for being here. We love talking with our friends at Historic Point Boss. Mike, you know how much I love talking to you talking history and everything. And today we get to talk about two great events going on. Let's start with the Harvest Fair.
Yeah, the Harvest Fair is something we've been doing. Tom, what do you think, probably 20 years at least?
At least.
Yeah, maybe 25, and we do all the normal harvest activities that you would imagine that they would do in the Wakely's day. I'll be making sauerkraut, taking the cabbage and shredding it, and we'll have some samples from last year for anybody, James, that wants to try it from last year's crop. And then we'll be doing some apple pressing for cider. We have our own apple trees, and of course, we have those available, and so we'll press that, and then we use that for both the spirit walk, and we use it for winter feast, so it's utilized. And I just brought in some beans. I was harvesting our beans out there. I picked them on Monday, and then I shucked them Tuesday or Wednesday. It took an hour and a half, but we got heritage beans that we use for different bean projects that we use for winter feast for food and everything, so we're trying to be kind of as much self-sufficient as we could, and we could be, because, of course, in the Wakely's day, they were self-sufficient. They had to. There wasn't stores around in the early years, and they had to raise or catch or trade for whatever they could get. So that sort of thing. We've got a couple new things this year, which is kind of exciting. And Tom, maybe you can talk about we got Ann Rosner, who normally and will again work with you this year on the cooking class, but she does foraging of different herbs and things, and she's going to have borage and raspberry leaf tea for people to try, and she collected some violets this year, and she made jelly out of them, and she's going to make a little toast and give you a little piece of toast with some of that violet jelly on it for those that haven't ever tasted that. And then she's also going to talk about foraging for sumac and elderberry blossom, bee balm, and German chamomile. So she'll have some examples of that. And this is stuff that you can get in our area. So it's available. It's wild, and either that or people are growing it in their gardens or whatever. So
I've talked to your kids about this. When it comes to foraging, that is one of the things in the last 10 years that has gotten a real upswing. A lot of people have been doing this, which is always kind of funny how people go back to what used to be and all that. Yeah. What was old is now new and that kind of thing. So I imagine that that's going to pull a lot of people in just that alone. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And then we also have a Victoria Ast, A-S-T, from Baraboo, Wisconsin, and she's a wool aficionado, and she's going to demonstrate different wool techniques, and she'll be able to teach some classes in the future, and she does felting and all kinds of things. She can tell from the type of sheep what you'd use that wool for. She's that well-versed in that.
That's awesome.
That sort of thing. So something new for us, and I think that'll be people really enjoy it and pick up on it sort of thing. And of course, all the buildings will be open, and the school will have projects for the kids. We also have we've encouraged the last year or so, a little passport. So the kids go around and get it stamped from each of the buildings they're at, and then at the end they get a pencil and some paper, or they get a little piece of candy or something like that, some kind of little treat at the end. And surprisingly, I think Tom would vouch to this, there's a lot of adults that like that passport too.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. And then, of course, Tom is following up the Saturday later with the cooking class. And so that's a tradition that we've been doing. Tom, what, probably 12, 15 years?
Oh, a good 10 or 12, yes.
10 or 12 years.
Well, it's got to be 10, at least.
And that's kind of blossomed into its own. Started out, relatively a little smaller and everything with less people involved, but now you've got quite a crew that gets everything ready and does different things as part of the project. And also, of course, we want to encourage the public to take part in that, and that you should sign up in advance for, because they got to know how many bodies they got there to get supplies and everything like that. And I think, what is it, Tom, still $15?
Yes, it is. Yeah, $15.
Same price it is started at is $15. Mm-hmm. So it's just to cover supplies and that sort of thing. And hopefully, and some of those people have come out of that cooking class and been good volunteers interpreting or whatever over the years. So, I mean, it's been a good resource for us.
Yeah. Before we get into the campfire cooking, go too far ahead, I do want to talk with Tom a little bit. Tom, how do you prepare for the fair? What is some of the things that you're doing to get ready for the fair?
Well, in the cabin, we're not as involved in that with our fur trade demonstrations and things. We kind of tell the story of the fall, mm-hmm. where the fur traders are there, and the Native Americans came in many times to get supplies for the winter on credit.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the fur trade that's not very well explained or known too much about.
Right.
But they would get supplies that they needed, and then in the spring, when they brought their pelts back to trade in, then they would pay off their debt and most hopefully have some extra so that they could then resupply themselves for the summertime area, because they traveled around not great distances, but from hunting camps to the maple syrup, and then to a place where they would have their gardens and probably along the rivers where they could fish in the summer. So we kind of do that life cycle story, and then talk about the cabin and how they would prepare for the fall and winter in the cabin. Yeah,
it's not too different, Tom, when we think about it. When we know about the Diebels and the Sweets grocery store, the neighborhood grocery stores that did the same thing, not necessarily for 6 months, but they ran a line of credit in most of those places. And so that was up until probably the mid-50s, early 60s, until the advent of what we call supermarkets came about. But that was a common thing, to run up a tab and then you'd pay it at when the payday came or whatever. So,
right, yeah. And a lot of people don't understand the credit system, and it's well documented in the treaties that were signed with the different tribes, that that some of the fur traders were granted money from the government to pay off debts that had accumulated over the years from different members of the different tribes.
It's very interesting, and really love to hear more about this. And you can hear more about it at the Harvest Fair. Mike, one of the things that stands out to me about this, and God, I love the passport idea. I really do love that idea, is with a lot of the events like the Spirit Walk and things, you're going there and you have plans. You have something to do. I love the Harvest Fair because there's plenty to do, but it's also a great opportunity if you haven't been there in a while or you've never gotten to check out the Historic Point Boss. Here's a perfect opportunity to come by and check out the schoolhouse, the trading post, at your kind of leisure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've talked about that before, James, that some of these events are very busy and you don't have time to check out things or talk with individual mm-hmm. interpreters. But this is one of those events that only occasionally might it be busy. The rest of the time you could spend an hour maybe in the cabin and talking with Tom or Joe or something about what they do and how they do it and what about this or what about that and can I get involved? And, of course, we always encourage that. And we've talked about usually save the last couple minutes of the program for volunteer opportunities. And so that's always a great time, you know, to do that sort of thing.
Mike, how do you get ready for this fair? How do you prepare for this? Would it be easier to ask you what you're not doing? Because you're busy.
Well, I already started making a list because this next week we got to pick our apples. We got about 3 bushels now, and we got to pick the rest of our apples. Normally, you want about 12 bushels of apples. And we'll also go out to one of our local cranberry bogs, and we have a good relationship with. They have some apples. If we need extra, we probably will be okay this year, but they also grow pears, and we like to throw in some pears with the apples because it gives a really a nice, a different flavor to the cider.
Yeah.
apple cider, so it's a little apple and pear cider mix. And the more varieties of apples you get, the better and the more unique flavors you get. If you only use one variety of apples, well, it tastes always the same. It's almost like going to the grocery store and buying, you know, apple juice, which is homogenized and pasteurized, and it's pretty generic after a while.
I got to be honest with y'all. I didn't know that. I'm learning that. The city boy's learning that right now. Gotta love talking to you guys. That's really interesting. Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
So if you want to get at least three or four varieties minimum, and then we throw in a few pears, too, just to mix it up a little bit. So.
And as we always like to mention, this is a great one for kids, especially I think little kids. When they take in these events, their brains are sponges, and they're just taking in all this knowledge. And one, it's just cool to learn about your history from where you're from, but I think the empathy it creates too, and the perspective that you can have. Now, maybe at 5, 6 years old, they're not thinking about it that way, but as they get older, that perspective comes a little bit more and more in tune in their brains, and they have this data to kind of look back on.
Yeah, I was just talking. I had to pick up something at the F&F this morning, and Katrina said that she was telling somebody, a good friend of ours, that, well, her four-year-old was cracking black walnuts, and so she was just cracking them on her own. They got kind of a little greenhouse sort of thing, and so she was in there, and then she needed something to pick the shells out, so she took like a chopstick or something, and sharpen the end of it to help pick out. So she was using her ingenuity.
That's awesome.
Even though they got something to pick it out with, she didn't know where it was at the time, so she was figuring it out. So kind of like the pioneer kids would learn that sort of thing. And what's nice about coming down there, James, is between the apple cider pressing and the kraut making and the corn grinding and all that, we encourage the kids to get involved with it, so they can have hands-on besides just looking at it and asking those questions.
One of the least surprising things I will hear today, though, is your grandchild or Katrina's kid doing that. Like that's par for the course. That makes sense. Yeah. I think a lot of little kids could learn like that and enjoy that part of this.
Sure.
There's so many layers to this event where with family-wise that I think, you know, if you want to go there with your buddies, you can have a good time just as much as if you bring the family down or something. This is one of those things that everybody can find something to really enjoy and take in.
Yeah, and also the Heart of Wisconsin Genealogical Society will provide lunch. So,
you
come down, don't worry about it. There'll be food available to purchase, and so you can have a good time. And plus, whenever you go, you got the samples of the apple cider, you got samples of the sauerkraut from last year. Wherever you go, there's usually samples of some sort. The tea from Ann Rosner's making. So it's a good learning and tasting experience. It's you're using all your senses when you go down there.
True. Great point. That's something you're really going to enjoy about this event. Again, the Harvest Fair is coming up 10 to 4, Saturday, September 9th. Tom's excited. We have Tom Bremmer and Mike Hittner with us from the Historic Point Boss. Tom, I'm glad you cleared your throat or whatever there, because I want to talk to you a little bit. I'm just messing with you, Tom. Campfire cooking. Let's get into that, the workshop that will concentrate on cooking methods and foods used by our ancestors. Tom, now, I know this is your wheelhouse, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Tom, you've been doing this for a long time, Tom. What is something that you look forward to every year about this event?
I think us learning from the students. That sounds weird, but each year we've got an outline and we go through it. It changes from year to year, certainly.
I love that answer, Tom. I love that.
Pick up something.
Yeah.
Grandma used to do it this way or whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a loose teacher. I teach acting. I don't really count that, but I've learned from doing it. Teaching is a learning experience. I think I've learned almost as much from my students as they have from me. I think that's a really good answer. That's great.
Yeah.
Tom, if people haven't been to this the campfire cooking workshop before, what can they expect?
Well, we're on September 16th from 9 until 4. I don't think we ever quite get to 4 o'clock. It's usually sometime after 3, we finally get through the whole program, then we go home.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll first of all start out with talking about cast iron and the other campfire cooking utensils and gadgets that we've collected over the years. And then we're going to go into some real primitive stuff where in the days of before the Native Americans were had been exposed to Europeans, they heated, for instance, heated water by using hot rocks to bring the water up. We have a demonstration of that. We'll do. Then we go into cooking, and the people that come can help us as we prepare main dishes that we will eat later on. Things like cobbler and lasagna and cranberry chicken and pork and kraut, that sort of thing that we're going to have main dishes at the lunch part of the thing. And they get to participate in getting that food prepared. They'll then move on to fire starting. We do flint and steel fire starting. If the sun is out, and I hope it is, we will also do the burning glass method, sort of the old magnifying glass, lighting fires with that. They'll do some cooking there also, smoke roasting of fish and venison, bread on a stick, bread dough wrapped on a stick and toasted over the fire to bake it. One of the guys brings a homemade reflector oven. He's going to make pineapple upside down cake in the reflector oven.
Oh, that's awesome.
Then one of the gals does some real, what we kind of call caveman cooking. We're going to do bacon and eggs. We're going to do some things called corn dodgers, and they're going to be cooked on a rock.
Oh, wow.
Not in a pan, just on a rock over the fire. It's a very smooth piece of slate that we have that we're going to be able to use that on. Corn dodgers, if your people aren't familiar, it's hot water cornbread that's cooked on a griddle or a pan or a hot rock that they would have made and eaten and then taken with them. It's kind of a very early corn meal bread type thing. It works out really well.
Is that early fast food? Is that like an early snack? Is it like a to-go snack? It sounds like you just make it this, on the road.
A to-go snack.
Yeah.
None of this is fast.
Strong point. Yeah. Very strong point, Tom.
You're going to have to rename this, Tom, the cooking class and the fall feast. It sounds like it's as much eating as cooking.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, it is.
Tom,
we'll move on. Well, go ahead.
I was going to ask, do you get into the cast iron itself, like the utensils, the items that you're using as much as the food?
Oh, yes. That's the very first thing we start with. It's an introduction in how to what it is, what you can find, how to do it, how to clean it, to season it, to keep it, whether you use it inside or outside. And we have several methods that we've picked up over the years to help preserve the cast iron. You know, that stuff is not indestructible.
Yeah.
You'd think so, and it weighs like a boat anchor, but when you think about it, you can't go from a blazing hot fire and then dump it in something cold. Mm-hmm. You'll break it. So, I mean, this is the kind of thing that we start out with first thing in the morning is getting to kind of learn about the utensils that are available.
I know there's a lot of people out there that still have a lot of their cast iron, maybe from the grandparents or something, and they want to take good care of it. That's another little added bonus of taking this in, is maybe learning a little bit more better care for that cast iron.
That's another thing that Tom could tell you. It's a great product is beeswax for taking care of that.
Yeah. That's one I learned a long time ago from another reenactor, and I thought he was nuts. Well, sorry. You was right.
It happens. Tom, as far as the types of meats or anything you guys are going to be cooking, is there any? Do you know now what you'll be cooking exactly?
Oh yes, we're going to do pork and kraut is one of them. We're going to do some cranberry chicken. I mean, we are in cranberry country, so we've got to do a cranberry thing.
Yeah.
We're going to do fish, three or four different ways. While we're here, we're going to do a baked stuffed pumpkin.
Nice.
We're cooking a Cornish hen directly over the fire on a apparatus that we have. We're going to be doing a venison loin in a reflector oven in the cabin, kind of a hearth cooking demonstration. We've got beaver tail.
Whoa. Now,
it's not scaly part that you see and you think about. It's the muscular part that operates that tail. It's very good. Beaver, we've learned at our winter feast, is an excellent protein. It tastes good, and it's easy to use. And they, you read in historic stuff about people eating beaver tail. Well, several of us have tried it. It's nasty.
Yeah, yeah.
The part where the scales are.
Okay.
That end of the tail that he used for his rudder and his prop when he stood up to gnaw on the trees. That's not good. But the muscles that operate that thing is excellent. It's kind of the end of the backbone as it comes down there. And we're going to roast some of that. We're going to do beans in the ground where you make a hole, put the coals, build a fire, and then put the pot of beans and then cover it with more coals and leave it for 4 hours. We're going to do that one.
You guys, I've learned two new things today. I did not know that anybody had ever in human history eaten beaver tail. I did not even hear this before. And then you're telling me that there's parts of it that are good.
It's actually a delicacy.
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, we hadn't eaten that part either, but last year, after the winter feast, we had, we'd heard about this. We thought we would, in talking about it, we said, well, we'll try it, you know. We knew that the tail part, the scaly part, was not good at all.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The other, we tried it out, and by gum, it was really good. So we this reverse engineering thing every now and then, you kind of got to do that.
Yeah, yeah. That is amazing, Tom. I appreciate you so much. Always love talking with you. Campfire Cooking going on September 16th. Just $15. I do have a limited class size, so we want to make sure to get people to register as soon as you can to get this filled up and everything. If you need to register, how can we just send them to the website, guys? Is that how you register?
Right.
Or you sign up for this?
Okay. And there's a phone number there, too. There are some posters out around the area if you happen to see one. But if you go on the website and it's contact us, then you'll be able to sign up through the website or this phone number also there.
HistoricPointBoss.com is the website, HistoricPointBoss.com. And, of course, Mike, I did want to always ask, like we like to, if anybody out there would like to be a part of this, to volunteer or anything, to please reach out to you all.
Yes, yes, we can always use volunteers. In fact, we have some new volunteers that have signed up for this event, and so they'll be mingling and finding out what they like to do and which way they'd like to help us. And so we're always looking for volunteers, you know, so that's... It's a good thing for anybody that has an interest at all.
And the Harvest Fair is happening Saturday, September 9th, 10 to 4, over at the beautiful Historic Point Boss. Adults, $3, children, $1. Find out more at historicpointboss.com. And come on down for these events. Help us keep history alive. And maybe if you feel like you can spare some time, we'd love you to put in a little time over there as well. That always helps. It helps us keep history alive over there with our good friends. Always appreciate you gentlemen joining us. Thanks so much for the time.
Yes, thanks, James and WFHR.
And again, thank you, Tom. Find out more at historicpointboss.com. That's all one word, historicpointboss.com. We'll be back with more Midday Magazine right here on WFHR.